The following is an audio podcast from the Korea Society, celebrating over 50 years of promoting greater awareness, understanding, and cooperation between the people of the United States and Korea. For more information on our programs, please visit our website at www.koreasociety.org. This podcast is brought to you through the generous financial support of the Tongyang Group. In the areas of financial services and manufacturing, the companies of the Tongyang Group harness the passion and creativity of 12,000 employees worldwide to better serve their clients. The Tongyang Group, a global partner for Korean business.
On March 18, 2009, the Korea Society hosted Pojagi, Cloth, Color, and Beyond, a panel discussion on the art and history of Korean wrapping cloths. Lee Talbot, Assistant Curator of the Textile Museum, Seta K. Wabe, Assistant Collection Manager of the Antonio Ratti Textile Center at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and fiber artist Chung Hee Lee spoke at the program, which was presented in support of Unwrapping the Secrets of Korean Textiles, an exhibition of Pojagi on display at the Korea Society Gallery.
All right. Thank you, Jin Yong, and many thanks to the Korea Society for inviting me here to celebrate the art of Pojagi. I began to look at Pojagi more closely during the 2 years that I spent working with the textile collections at the Chongyongyang Embroidery Museum and the Sugmyeong Women's University Museum, both of which are located in this building in Cheongpa-dong in Seoul. To me, as to many American observers, the designs of Korean patchwork pojagi look surprisingly familiar. On the right is a pojagi that you can see on display across the hall, and on the left is a Lancaster County quilt that we'll be displaying at the Textile Museum in an exhibition of Amish quilts that opens on April the 4th. These were possibly made around the same time by women who could presumably have had no knowledge of each other's textile traditions. But again and again, we see striking visual similarities between the patchwork patterns created by Korean and American women. The anonymous makers of these textiles were untrained as artists, and probably live lives that today would seem to us to be very circumscribed, but they created a distinguished body of visual art that continues to delight viewers and inspire artists worldwide. People began to look at quilts and pojagi more closely in the 1970s when museum exhibitions and scholarship opened the eyes of the public to the visual aesthetic similarities between quilts, pojagi, and the works, the paintings of modern abstract artists. One of the most striking parallels we see is between pojagi and the works of Mondrian, but the similarities are legion. This stimulated public interest in quilts and pojagi, and over the last 30 years, American quilts and Korean pojagi have become perhaps the most widely recognized and appreciated of all traditional textile forms in their respective countries of origin. We can appreciate quilts and pojagi, like all works of art, for the beauty and technical proficiency of their design, and also for the stories they tell, because all textiles, from the earliest historical examples to the works that you see in the back created by American students in the Korean Society, in the Korea Society workshop, all are documents of the people who made them and the societies and historical circumstances in which they were created. So the title of the exhibition here is Unwrapping the Secrets of Korean Textiles, so that we can begin to unwrap the many narratives of pojagi and talk about a little bit more about their meanings. I think it's helpful for us to look back at least briefly at the historical and social circumstances in which the early examples were created. In traditional Korea, as in many societies, textiles were among the most costly and cherished objects that people owned because of the enormous amount of time and labor that it required to create them, to raise the fibers, spin them into yarns, dye them, and then weave them into a finished fabric required thousands of hours of labor. And in Korea and in traditional China, taxes could be paid and goods bought with textiles. So they functioned like money. And this helps explain the global popularity of patchwork, because all over the world, people endeavored to make practical use of even the tiniest scraps of cloth. And as we can see from these genre paintings that we're looking at, in Korea, as in many traditional societies, textile production was traditionally associated with women. In Joseon Dynasty Korea, this gendered division of labor was given official sanction in Confucian policies, which were the basis of the state during the Joseon. Confucian writings summarize this in the phrase "Namgyong Yojik," men till, women weave. And some went on to elaborate on this and to list other duties and activities which were considered proper women's work. So you can see spinning and weaving, sewing and tailoring. These textile-related activities were seen as central to women's duties, and a woman's skill in doing these was reflective of her upbringing and her education. The Confucian doctrine that there should be distinction or separation between the sexes affected all aspects of women's life during the Joseon period, from the physical division of living spaces between the men's and women's quarters to the restriction of women's movement and activities outside of the home. So in the ante, the women's quarters, usually at the back of family compounds, women spent a great deal of their free time weaving, sewing, and embroidering. And although to us today this might sound rather restrictive, women did manage to play meaningful social, cultural, even political roles during the Joseon period. Some women even achieved great fame in literature and the arts, like the great Shin Saimdang, who painted this painting. And textile production, although this was a prescribed activity, was a way for women to earn money for themselves and their family. It was a socially acceptable way that women could have financial agency. Joseon literature abounds with stories of women who raised their families up from poverty through textile production. So it was in this cultural milieu, this cultural background, that the traditional pojagi were created. Pojagi is a general term that refers to many different kinds of wrapping and covering forms. But most broadly, they can be divided into gungbo, the pojagi used in the palace, and minbo, those used by the general populace. The use of pojagi may have originated in palace customs and certainly was encouraged by them, but at all social levels, pojagi fulfilled similar social and practical functions to protect and symbolically elevate the objects they wrapped, and to convey the giver's respect for the receiver and the context in which the gift was given. And in Korea, there was a widespread belief that lovingly made pojagi could capture happiness and luck and imbue the wrapped object with these qualities. The names and physical characteristics of pojagi differed according to their usage. These two, just for example, are called sangbo, and they were used to cover serving trays. In traditional Korean homes, there wasn't a designated place for serving meals. So meals would be prepared in a kitchen, the food placed on a serving tray, a sangbo placed over this, and then the trays carried wherever in the household the meals were to be eaten. Sangbo usually have some kind of a knob on the top to facilitate easy lifting, and often they're lined with oiled paper to protect the cloths. Sangbo made for commoners often are made of patchwork and thus also can be referred to as chogakbo. And there are many kinds of patchwork wrapping cloths to cover clothing or bedding. These are all chogakbo. In the Confucian worldview, frugality and modesty were valued. So a beautiful object made from modest materials received great respect. Buddhism also gave a particular significance to patchwork. Buddhist priest robes and furnishings often were made from fragments of textiles that were stitched together to dispel any appearance of extravagance. So Korean women would save leftover scraps of cloth, and as needed, they would cut them and arrange them in pleasing patterns, and then stitch them into chogakbo. So long before 20th century Western painters rejected illusionism and began to reduce the compositional elements down to their most fundamental and purest forms, Korean women had already mastered the art of abstract two-dimensional design. And as Korean mothers, grandmothers, sisters, and aunts stitched together wrapping cloths, they would direct their hopes and their good wishes towards their family members so as to imbue these textiles with good fortune. So now we turn to subo, or embroidered wrapping cloths, the designs on which are created with needle and thread. Like painting, embroidery requires great skill and requires great mental focus, but it allows the creation of colorful and representational patterns. Cosmological beliefs encouraged the idea that an image could bring about the effect of the thing pictured. So embroidered designs often articulate the hopes and aspirations of the makers. Sometimes these could be spelled out quite literally. For example, this one is embroidered with the characters for longevity, good fortune, health, and peace. And sometimes these wishes could be expressed metaphorically. For example, here, the peonies are representative of wealth and honor. Most embroidered wrapping cloths were used for happy occasions, such as birthdays, engagements, and weddings. Here, I'm listing just a few of the forms associated with weddings to give you an idea of the large number of wrapping cloths and textile forms that were used in this regard. On the left is a pojagi from the exhibition here, used for weddings or engagements, embroidered with a tree and bird design. Many embroidered pojagi used for weddings and engagements are embroidered with trees, birds, flowers, and butterflies, which were symbolic of fertility, conjugal happiness, and the abundance of nature. Sometimes the branches of the trees transform into birds, which compounds the symbolism of life and the interconnectedness of all living things. Trees are an ancient symbol in Korea, appearing as early as the famous gold crowns from the Silla Kingdom. And in Korean shamanism to the present day, trees hold a special place. Women in Gangwon-do, a relatively isolated province in eastern Korea, developed a distinctive style of embroidered pojagi with these abstracted, naturalistic forms. The juxtaposition of contrasting colors often within a single motif, references the five colors of the universe, cosmological beliefs that associated the five primary colors with the directions, the seasons, and the stages in life. And so though tonight we can only just touch on the subject, we can see that embroidered pujagi were deeply charged with many layers of cultural meaning. So I'll end here by saying that while pujagi are immediately accessible to modern audiences, our appreciation of these textiles deepens when we stop and consider the historical contexts in which they were originally made and used. During a particularly unfavorable time in their history, Korean women created a remarkable body of visual art that lives on to as a testament to their lives and to their creativity. And as we'll hear from our next speaker tonight, the art form that they created, pojagi, remains a dynamic art form to the present day. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your highly knowledgeable lecture. I'm almost intimidated to speak about my content. It is my great honor to be here. Thank you for Korea Society. In preparation of this talk, I feel very special to trace the development of pojagi works in past decades. This looking back has also made me examine my own progress as an artist. In this talk, I will bring you a continuum of material expression from my country's textile history and its past to the future. Pojagi, this could be a little bit overlap with my previous lecturer. Pojagi is a traditional wrapping cloth created by ordinary women and used every day for storage. Since I was asked to do my talk within 20 minutes, you will recognize that I'm skipping some of the explanation about, about the visual images. But I'm sure, these are all self-explanatory. Okay. This one. And ritual and ceremony. The symbols appearing in pojagi symbolize a wish for luck, prosperity, and long life. It is not unusual for us to use everyday objects without really seeing them. This was certainly the case with pojagi. These traditional wrapping cloths were so much a part of our lives that it was not until 1983 when Dr. Ho Dong-hwa, director of Korean Embroidery Museum, put the traditional pojagi he had collected for over 30 years on display at the National Folk Art Museum. This exhibition awakened the people of Korea to the beauty of this traditional wrapping cloth. The pojagi became known internationally when Dr. Ho Dong-hwa went on to exhibit his traditional pojagi in major cities of the world. The medium of pojagi truly began as a material expressions. Well, my personal contact with pojagi began with a wedding pojagi from my mother-in-law and her wish for good luck. At that time, I did not know that the pojagi would become so much part of my future. My interest in pojagi as art form came much later after research, practice, and teaching many students from many cultures. Pojagi has been a passport that enables me to share and elaborate on a cultural tradition that brings me here today. My first Bojagi public Bojagi lecture was way back in 1992. And then my first Bojagi teaching was at Haystack, one of the Haystack at an international session. I brought the anonymous woman to Haystack, where my teaching of Bojagi abroad began. I taught there 2 years ago as well. And this talk will be parallel talk, stories of my teaching and my own development. Okay, here you are seeing some of the students who are responding with the plain Bojagi. Some is playing as a necktie and some is as a skirt. In 1999, Rhode Island School of Design Textile Department accepted Bojagi as a credit course. In the winter session program, head person then was Maria Tulokas, started to teach at RISD, body of carefully selected students from different disciplines and from all over the world. In one classroom, there are many diverse factors that multiplies the creative energy and the result. Students are in general experiment with different materials. You just saw the student ceramic background student work and not a pouch. Okay. Interfacing background with sewn drawing. In this school, I introduced making traditional Bojagi and then challenge students to go beyond tradition. So you are seeing some of the beyond parts. This is a picnic blanket. And sculptural form made out of the stretchable fabric that can be a dress. Providence map. In a big piece of paper on the wall, I encourage students to explore ideas. A lot of properties of materials. Tracing the element of nature into work. Space divider made with thread and water-soluble base. Curtains as a piece of art. Using transparency to show the space inside. Material experimentations. Personal dwelling. Details. And material experimentation for summer cottage by an architecture major graduate student. From year 2000, for several years, I taught at the Evitech Institute of Art and Design, Finland, where I began teaching Bojagi in Europe. And 2 years later, two Finnish students came as interns to my studio in Seoul and collaborated with me on a time-based performance Bojagi piece. Connecting thread to Finland continued year 2004 when I brought the Bojagis of Finland Evitech Institute of Art and Design student to Haley Artist Community Korea. The artist community is a community of artists created about 7 years ago by artists from all disciplines to foster and exhibit the arts. I tell my foreign friends that it's a must to go and must to see place when you go to Korea. Yeah. In the following year, I had the opportunity to work with 16 master artists at the Australian Mitakong Textile Conference. Which was a major textile event in Australia. And the work produced during the conference was included in a show called Bozagi and Beyond, curated by one of the master artists. Okay, I will shorten here. Okay. In year 2002, RISD student works were shown in Korea at the Daegu International Textile Event, which was a large annual international exhibition and competition. And the students showed how they reinterpreted Bozagi as material expression according to their cultural background. Some wearable pieces were shown again at another event for the Daegu International Textile Event Universide. Cultural event include the World Student Fashion Show program. A big bozagi to wrap the body, symbol of woman's daily life. In year 2007, special opportunity occurred through the Silk Road Project, founded by a world-famous cellist Yo-Yo Ma in 1998, was in residence at RISD in the textile department. The year 2007 residency focused on indigo, which traced the evolution and cultural migration of the dye, while the musicians reflected on Silk Road traffic in their performances. The Bozagi students were dyeing their fabric with indigo and created individual works as well as giant collaborative Bozagi that is now in the RISD archives. From here, I'm showing. I'd like to show my work, my own work. It's one person show. At Walker Hill Art Center in Seoul. Since 1990, Bozagi making has rapidly been introduced and learned by many people around the world. Art universities, courses, workshops, international textile conferences, etc. My teaching position in the world have been unique because they are places where students from many cultures, backgrounds, and ages have come together to explore the Korean folk art item, Bozagi. In my teaching situation, I can observe students using various materials, imbuing them with their own meaning. If I may describe a little bit about my personal growth as an artist. In 1994, I was a Fulbright at RISD, and drawing and painting class was a strong influence on my own work, developing concept, understanding how form, techniques, and material linked to the concept. It provided an in-depth integration of thoughts and approaches in my work. You are seeing the image of my cup overflows, seven gratefulness in my life. Year in 2001, remarkably, Bozagi traveled to Victoria Albert Museum, London, UK. The Fashion in Motion program invites artists around the world to exhibit their work in a single program various times. Artists including Issei Miyake, Vivian Westwood, Jean-Paul Gaultier, Missoni, and Alexander Mackin had been invited to participate. I was showing my work on three different stages. Through my choice of color and material, I wanted to express the simpler, more organic life before urbanization in Korea. Silk, hemp, and rami, and the use of natural dyes were a more organic expression of life so ordinary in Korea. My work silhouettes were all contemporary. At the conclusion of the Fashion in Motion program, some of my paper wearables were exhibited for 2 months at Victoria Albert Museum's Textile Gallery. Papers are many parts of Korean life, in housing, household items, sometimes as wearables. In Korean history, paper had been used as a waterproofing when other material was hard to get. I wanted to include this historical precedent in a piece that I consider to be part of the conceptual genre. Paper was used in Korean daily life, for example, in interiors of houses. The windows used to have paper drapes instead of glass, like these days. In the past, people made waterproof paper clothing by using persimmon juice coating on the surface of paper cloth and wore them in farming work when it was raining. It was natural for me to think of change in material to conceptual paper bojage work. Two of my paper works were invited to be exhibited in the 2004 Holland Paper Biennale, a show of international paper artists at Rijksmuseum Museum. 30 artists from all over the world participated. This image, I was taking the foam from Korean traditional straw pillow for mourning. I used the paper course to show the oppressed life of Korean women in all time. You are seeing some of the images of my work. Seeing some of the outdoor reinterpreted bojage works. In the year of 2006, I had another opportunity for one-person show at the La Pongsa Gallery and also at the Surface Design Conference. And by now, I think you all noticed that I have been bringing so many Korean women who used to work so hard and faithfully and made bojagi and handed down to generation to generation. I'm honoring them in my work. Small rocks are a metaphor of Korean woman's life here. Some of the images I showed at the one-person show and also at the Cheongju International Craft Biennale. This work was material and intention-oriented, using paper in my expression. In Korea, when people pass away, the rest of family members almost immediately burn the deceased person's clothing. Due to this cultural practice, not so many old fabric or clothing remained. This is drawing with burn marks. In year 2007, the 5th Cheongju International Craft Biennale took place in Korea. You are seeing the Cheongju Craft Museum. It is becoming a world-class fair, getting to the point to be called same level as Lausanne Biennale. From my former student works, from many workshops I had given, including Honolulu and many other places, I was asked to put together the sections of the exhibition that has three components. F- first component was bozagi made by Korean artist. Some of the works has previously shown at Yangsuri Museum in Korea, and later at the Textile Gallery, Honolulu Academy of Arts, which I curated. Resemblance of Korean paper windows. Rubber coated. Fluorescent. Oh, this is another. Oh, here, second part is bozagi by American artists. Some of works were at artist community in Korea, and the articles by Dr. Charlotte de Holy, professor of University of London and former curator of V&A, also wrote an article about this. And these are adaptations or reinterpretation of bozagi by American artists. I'm so pleased to see this artist, Leonie Castellino, in the audience seat. Thank you for coming. Thirdly, Risti Indigo Bozagi Project, Bozagi for Yoyoma Silk Road Ensemble Performance, as a special feature within the Cheongju International Craft Biennale that displayed high-quality craft by nearly 3,000 artists from 60 countries. I would like to take this opportunity that when you go to Korea, please consider to visit and participate and see the Cheongju Craft Biennale, which is a biannual thing. And there was, during the Biennale, the first international globalization of bozagi symposium was held, and it included as speakers Professor Maria Tulokas Risti and Dr. Mary Ruth of Baylor University and Sarah Oka, Honolulu Academy of Arts. It was something remarkable for Korean people to see how their traditional techniques are appreciated and practiced by artists abroad, how the art forms accommodate different approaches and expressions. You are seeing some of the images of Korean old-time Korean women's images. During these years, I have seen bozagi emerge from the back room of old-time Korea from a male-dominant society where a woman's role was undervalued and considered insignificant. Women endured their lives sincerely and faithfully, performing multiple tasks in a labor-intensive society with almost no formal education, and especially with no art education, in order to make clothing for their families. I think this was described from previous lecture. I will skip it. In this age, bozagi has been transformed from a small and intimate household item to large art panels, wall pieces, wearables, soft sculpture, time-based performance and installations. And I and those anonymous women never dreamed that bozagi would have a famous musical accompaniment. The simple act of sewing ties east to west, young to old, past to present, and is building a bridge to the future. You are seeing as a last image, this would be my one-person show images, upcoming show at Fuller Craft Museum. Thank you very much.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for the Korea Society for inviting me to talk. My two previous esteemed panel colleagues have covered wonderful areas about the culture and the history and the origins of the Korean wrapping cloth, pojagi. And then we've gone beyond and heard about the art world. I'm going to touch a different aspect, a rather more basic approach of how this is built. And I just want to go back and in time and see where patchwork came from. So since I was asked to talk about the creation of the American quilt from geometric shapes, I would like you to pay attention to, as we go along, to the geometric shapes. And pojagi is translated in American culture as patchwork. And we will take a look at some of the survivors of patchwork from a long time ago. Here is from the museum in Cairo, the Egyptian Museum in Cairo, a patchwork from that dates back from the first century BCE, and it is a funerary canopy, and this was used in size about 22 feet long by 18, and it was used to cover the queen as she was transferred on a boat on the way to her funeral to be buried, and that's where it was found. It is a patchwork, and the reason it has survived is because it was in a tomb, but also it is made of gazelle leather. So although this is not textile, but the idea of patchwork existed long, long time ago. It wasn't the creation of one genius. We see that patchwork has existed in all cultures around the world. Also, not only as a utilitarian or as a ceremonial presentation, but also as art, as we saw, and I shall continue so you can see some examples. This also is an old survivor. This was found in the Cave of the Thousand Buddhas. It is pieced with patterned clothing. The travelers, as they went along the Silk Road, when they wanted, they reached certain temples or certain areas, they would make donations. They'd tear some of their clothes, pieces of what they were wearing, and would leave behind. Then the priests would come, sew them together, and use them as altar cloths. So, again, it has a symbolic presentation. This is one that's that is at the Metropolitan Museum of Art's collection. It's a panel, patchwork panel from the 13th century, made out of cotton. The previous one was silk. The first one was leather. This is from Sweden. We're now jumping to the 15th century. This one is part of a set of bedclothes that was found in Dalem, Sweden. The bedclothes was a collection of a bed cover, curtains, canopy, pillow covers. I'm not dealing with the applique. I'm just talking about the patchwork right now because you'll see why. This is another piece. We're jumping a few more centuries. Again, in Europe, this is a patchwork from Wales. And you will notice, again, the geometric shapes in here. And do notice the central panel. In order to make a quilt like this, and at that time, 18th, 19th century, this kind of art form was equivalent to embroidery. It was a ladies' kind of work. If we cross the Atlantic and we come to America, we see that there is a different kind of patchwork being made. These are patchworks that are an all-over design. They're made of little pieces that are sewn together. This is a particular design that was very popular in the middle of the 19th century, and it got very developed. And we will take a look at it again in a few minutes. But I wanted to diverge a minute and show you that, indeed, patchwork was used in other areas, such as this wedding jacket from China. It's an outfit. This Persian coat from the 19th century, which is now in the museum in Berlin, Germany. And many of you might have seen this, but I wanted to take a minute to pause at this one. This is an Elsa Schiaparelli from her spring collection, 1939. And again, I would like you to see the geometric shapes. Geometric shapes, square and triangle. I can say which came first, chicken or the egg, you know, it doesn't really matter. These shapes will come over and over again. So let's continue. If we start from a square piece and then we sew other square pieces together, as I said, patchwork was the sewing of small pieces of cloth to make a larger piece of cloth. So here we are. We get a square. Okay, so this is very good for a wrapping cloth, for a pojagi, or a pillow. But if we wanted to cover a bed, we had to go to a different number of arrangement. So we're sewing patches of square together. This is a 9-patch. And then this is an example of more patches. This is again from the Metropolitan Museum of Art collection. It is Alice in Wonderland, and it has 12 patches. Or you can even push the envelope further and go do many little squares and even subdivide your squares into stripes. Or you can take the triangle, the square, cut it in half, you get triangles. You have triangles, you can arrange them in a row. You can get this design. We'll come back to some of these again. Or you can take your triangles, cluster them, and you can end up with a hexagon, such as in this pattern. Or you can take a square within a square. We've seen some examples of this, and we're going to see them again. I'm sorry, Lee. This is called a diamond in a square. It's really, there are really two squares, but one is on point and one is flat. So here is a diamond in a square. This is a small piece. Actually, it's one of my pieces, and you can take a look at that. It's only 10 by 10 inches. This one is a pojagi. This is a 25 by 25. This as well is in the Metropolitan Museum of Art's collection. And you see that the center is a diamond in a square. Or we can see this Amish quilt, which is a diamond in a square in a much larger format, 79 by 79. And you don't have to stop at that. You have squares, the more the merrier. You can do something like this, which we've seen before. This is, again, a square in a square, but each square is made out of many little squares. Let's go back to the log cabin, which I said was one of the most popular quilt designs in America in the mid-19th century. And I'd like to show you an example of how this is built, since that's what my talk is about. Taking a closer look, we see these four pink squares. I would like to mention here that the pioneers, as they traveled westward, the men would build log cabins, and the structure of these log cabins were very similar to the Swedish log cabins. And as the men made the log cabins to live in, the women made the log cabin quilts to cover and keep them warm. And it has a certain symbolism. Although the center of this is pink, most of the time it's a warm color. It is a representation of the fireplace. Most of the time, it's really red. And then there are these stripes that go around, and we're going to build one of these blocks together in a moment. So here we are. We have the center red square, and then you put the light green on top. That's your start. So then you can go counterclockwise to the green, the darker green, and then the darker, and then the blue. Now, the green and the blue are the same length, so you can either put them following each other and then you can continue your design in an anti-clockwise fashion, or you can put them on either side of your center blocks. If you do that, the next will be, maybe I'll show here. So since these two are the same size, you can put them across from each other. The next two are these two. You can either put them one after the other, or you can put them opposite each other. I hope you get the idea. So you can go on doing this, and you end up with two squares that are built differently but look quite similar. And in fact, if the stripes were the same color as you see in this pojagi, you cannot tell which system was used unless you really get close to it and see how it was sewn together. This is the unique thing about the American log cabin is that you do sew pieces together. However, you can start, and this is how they did it then. You start with a piece of cloth and put a center patch on it. Now, this particular block is the back of the one I'm working on, and I want to, it's looks a little different because the stripes are uneven. On one side, the stripes are narrower, the other side, the stripes are wider. But the way it works with the numbering, if you follow, first you put your first piece on the other side of the fabric, the square. Then you put number two facing the first piece. You sew it, you open it. Then you put the next piece, you sew it, you open it, and you end up with this block. Okay, so your basic unit was a square, and of course the stripe are rectangles, and then you end up with a block. Now, there are many things you can do with this block. You can either have this, the light colors centered together, and if you sew it together, you end up with this pattern. Then, if you take your four pieces again, and you put this time the dark sides against each other, then you end up with this design. So, you know, you can start with the exact same square, but depending on how you put them together, you end up with a completely different effect. For instance, here is one. This is from the Metropolitan Museum of Art collection. You can see the lights are together, the darks are together. However, if you want to see what is the building block of this unit, you have to go not this as your square, this is another one. This is the Amish version. And here, the center of your log cabin is even more camouflaged because all the dark piece, all the dark stripes are melding together, and it looks like a background. The center of your block here is the red square, and you have the light and the dark around. Then, again, log cabin, you can get even more fancy, and you can end up with something like a pineapple log cabin. And this is pretty much, if you look closer at it, it is two superimposed log cabins. So you can look at it straight, or you can look at it on point, so you have two log cabins that are overlapping. Another thing that became very popular about that same time period, but this is when there was more fabric available, and it's called the puzzle quilt. Most often they call it the crazy quilt. I take exception to that, and I like it. I like to call it the puzzle quilt. If you look at this one, I'm sorry, it's not very well focused, but if you look at it, you will see that there are six squares going across and seven going down. It's a little clearer in here. This particular puzzle quilt is a memorial quilt. It was made for Grace, and her name is there in the center. Sorry, I wanted to show you her name here. Grace died at the age of 21, so her family members and friends got together, and they made squares and put them together. This was done towards the end of the 19th century. And it is a nine patch. As you can see, there are this one being one, the center one. And then there are the other eight are around. This is a pojagi, and if you look at it closely, you will see that there is a central square. It's rather elongated. This is your center square, is this whole thing here. Your side stripes are this and that. They are patched. And since they are on an angle, it looks, it doesn't look like stripes, but you will notice that there are those two stripes on the sides. Then up and down you have the two multi-stripes. Then on the side of those there are two longer multi-stripes. Then you have the black and red on top, black and red at the bottom, and then the yellow and black on the sides. So it's built in the same fashion. As we said, with squares, I mentioned before that you can make triangles and you can put the triangles in a row, and you saw this. And it was very popular to give these names, and depending on where you lived, they had different names. This was called the flying geese. And if you made them going from a center, going in four different directions, it became a wild goose chase. And if you put them all together, it was birds in the sky. You see the same thing in the exhibition out there. So it's all a matter of color, play, and size at this point. You have your triangles again. You can vary the sizes, arrange them differently. You can end up with baskets or the Amish version of baskets. These are all made with triangles. Or you can make maple leaves. Or if you take your triangles and put them on point going around, you get a pinwheel, another Amish. The Amish, the ones you can notice that is because of their solid colors and somber colors. And very often, different part of the states use different colors. There were certain groups that didn't use yellow, for instance, and so on. I showed you the hexagon before. You can make a hexagon with six equilateral triangles. This is your hexagon. Then you can put, if you put six hexagon around it, when you walk around the sidewalks of New York, pay attention to the pavers. They will see you. They're very familiar. This is what they look like. But in a quilt, if you put them in colors, this is what you can end up with. And this is, this design is sometimes referred to as grandmother's flower garden. And varying the colors of these quilts, you can make them look as if they're on a white background, yet those are all hexagons sewn together. This one looks like a honeycomb. If you take your triangles, your hexagon this time, and add triangles around, you end up with a star. There are many ways of making stars. You can get a square and add, you can add either four or you can add eight triangles around it. For instance, this one is an eight-point star. Or you can make an eight-point star with diamond shapes. You have these four and you put four more and you end up with this design. And this one's called Lemoine star. Now, if you get very ambitious, you can go take this star and put many more diamonds around it, and you can get a sunburst of stars. And this is called either sunburst, as in this one, or it's also called the Star of Bethlehem. And if you're not that ambitious, you can just take this tiny little star that's in the corner and you can applique it and end up with something like that. Thank you very much. And I just wanted to also mention that there are some samples of my work there. If you want to take a closer look, you're very welcome.
Now I would like to open the panel for more discussion, and then we'll take the question from the audience. So three speakers going to stay on this here.
All right. So any questions?
I think we've put them all to sleep.
Okay, we have one in the back.
I have a question that has to do with preservation of fabric. And how do you preserve fabric that is made out of silk organza? How do you, when you display it, when you store it, especially the pochagis, what do you recommend?
I'd be happy to take that. Yes, thank you. As we all know, textiles are very perishable, and the best way to preserve a textile, silks actually are quite hardy. It also depends on how it's been treated beforehand. But what you do with textile is, as most artwork, you keep them away from light. You keep them at a constant temperature. A good temperature would be 68 to 70 degrees. You keep them at constant humidity, which for silk between 50% is good, but you can go a little bit higher, but not much, 50-55% humidity. You store them, as I said, away from light, and also if they are not disturbed too often, for instance, if you want to exhibit them, don't exhibit them forever. Exhibit them for 6 months, take them down, you know, put something else in its place. Always, of course, handle them with either gloves or clean hands. Avoid other kind of pollution.
The problems that I'm concerned with is that the type of container that you roll them up in. So I've got my bojagis.
Yes.
If I roll them up, I can get acid-free paper.
Yes.
But what about the containers?
Everything has to be acid-free in an ideal world.
Right.
And you said the magic word there. If you cannot store your object flat, it's best to roll them. Folding is quite a no-no, right, ladies? You have to make sure everything is acid-free. Okay. Even the tube, the box. If the box isn't, yeah, make sure that what is touching the textile is.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
I really don't know a tremendous amount about this, but from what I've seen of Chinji's work in particular, what interests me is that in Bojagi, they're very interested in emphasizing the seam or the connection, and that makes the sort of quilt-like quality give it a very distinctive, different look, even though you make comparisons to general conceptual similarities. It's the selvage-like border that it seems to me distinctly Korean. I don't know if that's true, but I wonder if you could comment how this evolved. Is this a particular, or is it, and how is it, how do you see it as something that's long-term or something you put into it or whatever?
Well, actually, yesterday was the last day of the four-week session, and we talked about the framing or edging or the bordering, if that is your question. And traditionally, there are several ways of doing the frames, but the connections. One of the beauty in Bojagi, I think I could comment, it is the gekki construction, which is triple time stitching, which gives much more strong and stiff and strong linear quality in the design. And almost it's like one of the most characteristic in Bojagi making, especially when you are using like a fine organza, kind of fine fabrics. So especially with the light behind, the linear, the construction, the seaming itself becomes such a distinctive design quality.
And does it have a long history?
Oh, yes, it does. Yeah, I can show you some of my works. And I also have, for anyone who might be interested, I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, know about the history of Bojagi, but just in case, I have brought a printed history of Bojagi, so I could talk with you later. Yes? Oh, no.
I would like to know in today's Korea, is Bojagi considered a work of art, or is it common usage? For instance, you mentioned before Bojagi being used as to wrap. Mm-hmm. Is it used commonly to wrap gifts, for instance? Is it something used on a daily basis?
Yeah, I think it's becoming like a 50-50. Of course, in the past, it has been a functional object, like a functional oriented items that to wrap or store in. But today, it's more and more people are interested in adopting bojagi as an art form. So they make kind of wall pieces and then like partitions and many other things, like even jewelry, unconventional jewelry made out of hand-sewn bojagi construction. But still, maybe I should say, if you go to Korea, you know, it's very easy that you can find the sellable bojagi, which is... you can buy and then put it on the table and then put on the windows. But it is kind of a little bit expensive, or it's, to me it's too beautiful to use, and I would be afraid, you know, what if my coffee is, you know. Yes. So my answer is it could be 50-50, and more tendency is more towards as an art forms.
And probably fewer women have time to make bojagi today.
And there's several institutions, especially the Korean traditional folk art technique school, and where students learn solely on traditional technique. So there is that kind of institution, and also private teachers who teaches how to make a bojagi. Mm.
Yes, on that line, a friend of mine who I spoke with the other day, who is Korean, she said that when she was 16 in her school, they took, much like we might take a home economics class, they were, part of their curriculum was to take a class in making bojagi. And she's probably in her late 30s now, so it wasn't that long ago.
Mm-hmm. You had mentioned previously that... There's like a breakdown of different styles when it's given to weddings versus maybe the palace to common people. And within those breakdowns or groups, are there certain materials that one wouldn't use, say, on a wedding, bojagi, versus someone giving one as a gift? Or is anything material specific or gender specific? Or
In making bojagi? Mm-hmm. Are you asking me or?
Everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Would you like to answer? Or? Yeah. I would like to comment on your question. In the past, the woman used whatever was available. I mean, whatever is there. But these days, like we live a very different world, like so much abundance in materials. And, I might be talking a little bit different things, but there are so many textiles, so many fabrics available in Korea. So these days, people can choose any color, any, like, what could be considered a little bit expensive in Western world, like silk fabrics, and it has even the jacquard woven. And usually, one can use any colors, but when weddings, one uses red, blue. Always red is used. Red, green, and red, black. I think that could be the only kind of tradition using the colors. Otherwise, it depends what you have and how you like your bojagi finished. Yeah.
Is there any significance behind what the final outcome or size would be of the piece?
Well, in maybe I could mention about there's one could find some symbol knot. We all learned in the class the bat knot. That is especially whistling for luck. So one can find often in the bojagis, you can find tiny little knots that almost look like it was knotted by a cord, fine cord, but actually it is small scraps of fabric. And for that example, you can see over there the big bojagi. There are so many 15 bead knots, and the maker artist is here. Yes, that's...
Is there any symbolic significance in the extreme rigidity of the pattern, especially in American quilts?
Other than the log cabin...
other than crazy quilt?
I don't know. I guess it depends on the maker. I'm not sure. What did you have in mind? I'm not sure how to answer your question.
My perception is,
yes.
Because I'm not really exposed to the world of bojagi, but...
Korean bojagi seems to be a little more random in its composition. But when I look at American bojagi quilts, they are very symmetrical.
Yes.
Regular.
Thank you. The examples I showed were of traditional. Of course, the world, the in the 20th and 21st century, the quilts have become a complete art world. It's no longer considered as a utilitarian. Yes, the images I did show you were not art quilts. They were traditional American quilts. But as far as that is concerned, yes, they are very pattern, very strict. But you find a lot of art quilts that have very different approaches. Quite parallel to what's going on in the Korean art world.
I saw in the bojagi that's out in the exhibit hall, most of them are done by hand, and certainly early American quilts were also done by hand. Do you use machines, or is everything still done by hand in the Korean
Even
craft?
Me, as a personal practice, I mostly use a machine. Yes, but you know, sometimes I do add like hand-sewn qualities, but not as a whole technique, because I tend to have my bojagi. Many times I do make my bojagi as an installation piece, which is it could be considered as large piece. So I thought, you know, I don't have enough time. And if I do it by hands, I can only make one until, you know, I can, you know. So I tend to do the using the machine. And like all of you, if not, I mean, like every artist, there's could be so many ideas. And then I want to do the visualize the ideas. And when it is through the hands, and I think it will take so much time. So I admire and respect those artists who does with only hands.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question about stitching them together. I thought bojagi is one of the difference from Western patchwork is the way you stitch traditionally. Mm-hmm. I'm a conservator, so I always have to know how the things are mm-hmm. put together. And Western patchwork, we put clothes together, stitch it, and open the seam, so mm-hmm. stitch is hidden. Mm-hmm. But I think, if I'm correctly understood, the bojagi has to be made shape first.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it's already made shape and fold the edge, and then you stitch.
Mm-hmm.
And the stitch comes on the surface.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That I thought it's a very different two characters of stitching together. Is that?
In Bozagi making, the stitching line can be hidden. You know, it can be invisibly arranged.
So you do both ways.
Yeah, both ways. And there's, again, a very good example that in constructing the patches, the intentionally the sewn lines are visibly shown, which is another like a nice element in the design. So my answer could be in both ways. Yeah. And sometimes, for instance, gekki as one of the characteristic in bozagi making, and then like we all experienced yesterday, traditionally the seam line supposed to be underneath, like what we say wrong side. But as a visual person, the linear quality is so nice and so beautiful. I personally have the sewn line on the surface, to be on the surface. In that case, obviously, the sewn line will be seen and then will play as a design element also.
I was just wondering about when the period is that we see a transition from the pojagi as a traditional art form to that of an artistic expression. Does that correspond at all with the end of the dynasty in 1910 or kind of the importance of Confucianism later on within the 20th century and how,
I think
how that
it
all
is,
relates, or okay. If it does?
Yeah. I think it was definitely and obviously after the Dr. Hodonga showed his traditional bojagi 1983, there was great stimulation for the people in Korea, among the artists, among the textile and fiber artists. So I could say that it could be early part of 1990 or later part of 1980s that the bojagi was incorporated into art making.
Mm-hmm. And are the tenets of Confucianism still important yes. to many of the artists that are
yes.
creating these works?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Here in the audience, there are many participants from the workshop, so maybe you could bring up your experience. You guys want to talk about it?
I'd just like to say that some of us who took the workshops came from the standpoint of being avid American quilters. And I was drawn into the exhibit when I came to visit, well, in two ways. Number one, looking at the shapes that you talked about, they were so familiar. They were things we had identified as being associated with the American move westward and all those activities. So right away, when I saw, you know, a log cabin on the wall in silk, it kind of drew me in. Also, too, I was drawn in by the fact that people were actually working with unstabilized silk. Those of us who work as quilters today, even as hobbyists, one of the first rules is stabilize, 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 and all of our fabrics are unstabilized. And, of course, while I came to this class considering myself a fairly competent sewer, I learned very quickly that pick stitching and doing hand stitches on silk was basically like trying to nail jello to the wall. I mean, it was really quite a completely different technique. So it was really an eye-opener for me. But also, too, I really loved the link between the way women's work was never valued before in almost any society, not just in Western or Eastern society, and the way women's work is now more valued, and also how important the study of textiles has become. I mean, I've been quilting for a little over 20 years, and when I started, you had to go to look to find a serious exhibit of quilts and textiles anywhere, even here in the metropolitan area, in such a vibrant arts community. Now, I mean, just this past winter alone, the city has been awash in phenomenal textile-related exhibits. And I think, again, this is because of women's work rising in the estimation of the community in general and the arts community in particular. So this has left me very excited, too. And this class and this teacher also contributed to that for me, and I thank you very much.
Thank you. I had a wonderful, highly standard workshop participant. It was so much an honor for me. Thank you.
I had seen pojogi in a museum about 10 years ago. And I had been in Korea about 20 years ago and had never seen pojogi when I was in Korea.
Which part of Korea were you?
Pardon?
Which part of Korea?
I was in Seoul on business regularly from 1981 to 1985.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was just before the boom of the pojogi, yeah.
Just my luck. And what had struck me about the pojogi that I had seen in the museum was the simplicity and the beauty of it. The simplicity reminded me of the Amish quilts, mm-hmm. but the delicacy was something I never saw in the Amish quilts. And I think that that was what had struck me as so exquisite. And that was why I had wanted to take the class. Mm-hmm. And that was why I was here.
Well, thank
so
you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
First of all, I was very glad to be attending this class. I grew up in Korea. I moved to overseas about for 20 years. I missed my culture. I was longing to learn things from my culture. Finally, I got it. I was really happy. And combining my background that I studied fashion design, and I'm really happy to put something from my culture in my art pieces. I cannot explain the emotion, my emotion that I felt. And I'm very appreciative to Korea Society to provide this kind of art classes for us. I wish you have some more classes like this. Thank you very much for my teacher that taught us in our class. And I'm looking forward to your fantastic pieces more. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So any more questions? We'll be around. So afterwards, if you have any questions, you can come up and ask us. So, on behalf of the Korea Society, I thank you all for coming tonight and hope to see you back here soon.
The opinions expressed in the preceding program are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Korea Society, its staff, or management. Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Korea Society. If you enjoyed it, please consider becoming a member. Visit www.koreasociety.org for more information about memberships and to learn more about the programs available at the Korea Society.